Prescriptions for Health with Dr. Len and Vicky Saputo. Mondays at 3 p.m. Eastern Time on the Progressive Radio Network.
Broadcast out of New York City, you're listening to Prescriptions for Health on Monday, February 20th, 2012. I'm Dr. Len Saputo.
And I'm registered nurse Vicky Saputo. Thank you for joining us on our weekly Prescriptions for Health show on ProgressiveRadioNetwork.com every Monday live from 3 to 4 p.m. Eastern Time and from 12 noon to 1 p.m. Pacific Time. And remember that our shows are all archived on DrSaputo.com and PRN.fm.
Today you're going to hear Vicky's 2020 health tips at 20 after the hour and 22 the hour. And we've got a great show for you today that's going to include patients who are the most satisfied with their care are the dead ones. What?
And is medical practice more harmful than helpful?
And some pediatricians are firing their patients if they don't take vaccines. What do you think of that?
And do we really have a drug shortage crisis, or is it a marketing ploy?
And did you know that heart failure is linked to thinner bones and fractures?
And how can we help cancer pain other than with drugs? And much, much more.
So if you want to join our conversation and you have questions about our topics or your health issues, give us a call. The number is 888-874-4888.
Well, here's a great research result. Patients most satisfied with their health care have the highest mortality rate and the highest hospitalization rate and the highest health care costs.
What's going on? I thought medicine is just automatically great.
Well, you know, last week we talked a bit about overdoing tests and procedures and drugs and surgeries and so forth. You think this has anything to do with it?
Well, you bet. You know, medicine is not the easiest thing to practice. We tend to do more tests, and that leads to more satisfied patients because they think that the tests are really a good thing to check into every little detail. Spend more money, and we do more things to people. We make more diagnoses, and there's more treatment. Doctors have more business when it's like that. It costs more money. There are conflicts of interest that we've talked about that have to do with doctors making more money because they have investments in certain procedures, like if they buy into an MRI scanner or a CT scanner or they're doing certain kinds of heart tests, they tend to prescribe them more often, and that leads to a lot more in the way of procedures.
You know, if any of you out there have any horror stories that you'd like to share with us, the number here at Prescriptions for Health is 888-874-4888. That's 888-874-4888. I have a friend actually just in the last couple of weeks that had a test done. They were going to just do a biopsy, and they did that. And then they said, well, they didn't get enough, so they were going to do it again. And they told her that the name of the test was something other than what they really were doing. And so she thought that she was getting this particular test. So then they did it again, and the doctor even came in and said, well, we didn't get enough biopsy. And I thought, well, why didn't they go back and get some more while they were there? Because she was awake. And so they didn't. And so now they want to do this other procedure, which she thought was what she was having in the first place. But this other procedure is more invasive, and you have to go under an anesthetic and everything. Well, of course, now she doesn't trust her doctor, and she says that her doctor's husband is the pathologist. And so she was, you know, upset and worried if maybe there was a conflict of interest. But this kind of thing, I think, goes on all the time.
Well, it happens, and you'd like to think that doctors would be, if they're not doing a right job or they've made a mistake or they've done something that isn't exactly perfect, that they would be responsible, you know, just like a warranty when you buy a car or something. That just makes a lot of sense. But let's look at this study. You know, they had something like 50,000 people in this study, and they found that those patients who were the happiest with their physicians were ones who had fewer emergency room visits, but ones who spent more money on overall health care by about 9%, and also more on drugs by about 9%. And they had a mortality rate at 4 years, okay, after the study began, that was 26% higher. And it's like, what?
They're thinking that they're being better taken care of.
If they're doing more.
Because they're doing more, but sometimes less is best.
Well, let's look at what happens in healthcare. There are close to 1 million deaths every year in this country because of problems that occur with health care delivery.
Is this atrocious?
Well, I mean, we lose 8,000 people in Iraq, and we think that's a huge thing. And we lose 1 million a year in the U.S., and it's like doctors and health care is a lot more dangerous than being a soldier.
Well, losing one person is a big deal if it's somebody you love.
Well,
you know?
Sure. For sure.
But a million a year? That's just unbelievable.
Well, 400,000 from pharmaceutical drugs, whether used appropriately or not. In fact, the expected side effects of drugs will kill more than 100,000 people of just people who are in the hospital. It doesn't even count the ones outside the hospital. And then we've got mistakes that are made and operations that aren't necessary that lead to death and anesthetic problems and infections
and surgery.
I mean, all this goes on. Medicine is a very dangerous thing, and we just sort of cavalierly assume that when you're sick, you go to the doctor and that you don't have to worry about it because the doctor's going to give you something that's going to make you feel better. Well, there is some truth to that, but we don't look at the downside. And the question that I've been asking myself for the last 25 years is, do we do more good than we do harm? And that's such a powerful statement to make.
But I want to also say that we're not saying this flat against the board, because there are times that people do need to go to the hospital and
But it's a balance. I mean, overall, is medicine more beneficial or is it more harmful? Would we do better if there were no doctors at all? And it sounds like a stupid thing to say because, of course, it is, but is it?
We did find that out once when there was a doctor strike.
Well, almost all the doctor strikes are not associated with more deaths. They're associated with fewer deaths. And there are probably 100 studies that were done like that that were published. And everybody sort of just laughs and says, well, that can't be real. I mean, that's ridiculous. It must be some kind of fluke. I say we take a careful look at it. Why don't we do some studies that are real solid studies that look at that? And, of course, who wants to know that? The doctors don't want to know that because that's their job. The pharmaceutical industry doesn't want to know it because that's their job. The insurance industry doesn't want to know about it because they like it when everybody's sick because they make more money that way. And a lot of you don't really see that, but I'll explain it to you this way. If you pay, say, if you have $100, okay, that you take in as an insurance company and you make 25% profit, at the end of the year, you've made $25. If you've got $100 million invested, $25 million would be your profit. And if you have billions, there would be billions in return. So the more illness there is, the more insurance is thought to be necessary, and the more they make. Of course, once they have all those insurance policies, if people got sick less often, it would lower the expenses and increase their profits. But you see the double-edged sword here that's involved with the business of the insurance companies. So when you see an article like this that comes out that's published in where? Archives of Internal Medicine, okay? A major internal medicine journal published in the United States. This is shocking stuff. So when we look at the fact that medicine is a dangerous thing, it should just point out to us that what we should be trying to accomplish is self-care, prevention, wellness, doing the lifestyle measures that are safest things for us to do.
Well, also, you know, there's this early detection versus, you know, treatment.
Prevention.
And many times early detection is termed prevention.
Well,
when it's really not.
Well, now, sometimes it opens Pandora's box, too, because let's say you have a little problem that you find when you're doing, say, a carotid ultrasound, and there seems to be a little blockage there. And then all of a sudden you're wanting to do a coronary arteriogram. And the next thing you know is a lot of these people are getting operations both on their neck and in their hearts. And 97% of those in asymptomatic people should not be done because medical treatment is as good or better than doing surgical procedures or putting stents in.
And there's not the same risk.
No, not at all. So, I mean, medicine is complicated. It's too difficult, really, to practice. And that's why we have something called specialists. I specialized in what? Just the lungs, or just the heart, or just the eye, or just the skin. What do you know as a skin doctor about the rest of the body and about the effects of most of the medications that you're using? Or for that matter, what does any doctor know about the negative effects of medications actually? We look at the positive things and think that's the cat's meow and say, well, I can fix that because we've got this drug. And, oh, yeah, I hear there's some problems with it, but it's probably not much. I mean, look at the example of the non-steroidal anti-inflammatory drugs like Advil and Aleve and Motrin and Celebrex, and the ones that were taken off the market. I mean, they kill 30,000 people a year still today in this country. 30,000 people a year in this country every year, and put 300,000 in the hospital. And that's okay? Hello? Who's thinking out there? I mean, that's insanity. That's why Gary Null published his wonderful article called Death by Medicine. And I was privileged to be in the video that was done, along with a lot of interesting people who came to the conclusion that the pharmaceutical industry is dishonest, it's unscrupulous, it's interested in making money as the primary thing. There are conflicts of interest all over the place. They make so much money, they control the FDA and Congress. And we're sitting here going, oh, well, it must be good because here's an ad on television. It must be right. Wow.
This article here also got into back problems. Mm-hmm. You know, most people have a back problem sometime in their life.
They do.
Or if you don't, you know, everybody knows somebody that does.
Exactly.
Or you get a back problem, and then all of a sudden everybody comes out of the woodwork and tells you about their back problems. But they were showing that a lot of these imaging studies, for example, for low back pain,
the MRIs,
are pretty expensive, and they're not always helpful, and sometimes they hurt the patients. So how does it hurt the patient to have, like, an MRI scan, for example?
Well, you find out too much a lot of the time. I say I will not order an MRI on my patients with back pain unless I'm considering that they go to surgery. Because, in part, I don't want to know some of what I'll find. And you say, well, don't you really want to see what's going on there? Well, yeah, it would be nice. But if you're going to spend $2,000 or $3,000, which you can, to do an MRI, that's a lot of money to spend. It could be spent a lot better some other way. And it's just a matter of appeasing your curiosity most of the time. If you take 30-year-olds off the street, just pick 130-year-olds, and you do MRIs on their back, 30% of them will have abnormalities, which if you had pain, would lead a neurosurgeon or orthopedic surgeon to consider the possibility of surgery. These studies have been done.
And yet, according to this study, many times things like physical therapy and other types of therapies will take care of the pain
or
the problem.
People want the quick fix.
So in other words, it's better to try something non-invasive first and see if you can get better. You know what's interesting? I've had degenerative disc disease in my neck for over 30 years, probably 35 years. Mm-hmm. And when you look at the x-ray, because I did have an x-ray done, it just looks terrible. Mm-hmm. But, you know, I was talking to my son about it, who used to be a chiropractor, and he says, you know, Mom, the good news is some people have x-rays that look like that, and they don't even have pain.
Right.
Sometimes they don't even have symptoms.
That's right.
And I thought, wow, that gave me hope, you know, to think that you could, you know, not have to have a chronic pain or a chronic symptom or what have you, and that there's a possibility of it not even hurting. But now if I had that x-ray done by a surgeon, he'd probably be recommending that I have surgery.
Well, he'd be wanting to consider it. You know, there's a much cheaper test that doesn't cost hardly that much, maybe $150, is to do a thermogram, a heat a picture of someone's back.
Well, like what you
they
do.
Have that. So you do thermography, and it shows you the physiology of what's happening in the back, so that if you have a red-hot nerve, okay, that's giving you sciatica or a lot of back pain, you can tell on that better than you can an MRI whether or not there are symptoms that are being caused by that problem, because the anatomy shows you the physical problems there, but the body is remarkably adaptive, so that if you do have a pinched nerve, it will work so that it adapts to that pinching, and over time the swelling will go away, and the size of that foramen through which the nerve is passing may dissolve a little bit because the body's adapting. If you have something that's being squeezed and pinched and it's causing sciatica, you'll see in a thermogram. It shows you. So it shows you the physiology of what's happening. And yet the mainstream doesn't do this test. It thinks it's some kind of quackery. And there's great science behind it. It's the same thing with breast thermography, another really good way to look at the physiology of what's happening and to figure out which of those cancers are aggressive and which ones look like a cancer but aren't going to do anything.
The other thing I think would be good to bring up right now is many times people say, well, I've tried all the alternatives. I've gone to the chiropractor. I've had the body work. I've done all this different type of therapy, and I still have the back problem.
Right.
So I'm going to go to surgery.
Right.
And many
it's a desperation.
But many times you get the patients that we call failed back syndrome that have had the back surgery and they're still in pain.
See,
now, wouldn't that be awful to go through that whole thing and you still have the pain?
Oh, absolutely. We do what I call drugless pain management. We have a center in Walnut Creek at the Health Medicine Center that practices drugless pain management. And who's on our team? I'm on it, of course, looking at it from the medical point of view and looking at the thermograms that we do that give us an idea of what's going on with somebody who has pain. We have somebody who does body work that's extraordinary at looking at the kinds of tension, muscle tension patterns that are present, and sometimes linking that to emotional issues which cause that to begin with.
And sometimes recommending stretches.
Oh, stretching. She does something called gyrotonic, which is sort of an advanced form of Pilates exercise, and many other kinds.
And I'd like
we have
to
body
say-
workers who do other things with, like Feldenkrais. We have a psychologist that does Qigong and does imagery. And we have a nutritionist who knows about anti-inflammatory diets. And you put this all together, you've got a powerful team that looks at a person and works together as a unit, all out of operating out of the same place. We even do what's called a healing circle.
And you do acupuncture there, too.
Do acupuncture as well. We bring people together. We'll bring our whole team together. And this we do for free. We've got maybe 5 or 6 or 7 people. They get together with our patients for 2 hours. We do them on Friday afternoons, and we have them write an autobiography of their physical, emotional, and spiritual life. Everybody reads it, and then we sit together for 2 hours, and we do two things that are primary things. One, we listen. Listen very deeply in a sacred space where we're trying to understand where the person is coming from and not interrupting them. And second, we care. We're very involved personally. It makes a difference to us personally whether or not this person's getting better or not. And of course, we bring the technologies of the different disciplines that are there to say, well, I can do this or I can add that. And then collectively, we put together a program that is for this person that might go over a matter of a week or two or three or a month or even in some cases ongoing for months or even years if it's necessary. But we hardly ever have to resort to drugs. We don't refer people hardly ever to a standard pain management center because we know what happens. They wind up on all kinds of drugs that are toxic, that can cause all kinds of problems, that can be lethal. They ruin your quality of life. They interfere with the way you think.
And even sometimes the drugs that are injected, like the cortisone.
Oh, absolutely.
Slows down the healing. It might make it feel better for a while, but it slows down the healing.
An epidural injection in the spine for someone who has a disc, you can do 2 or 3 times. And it's great as an anti-inflammatory agent, but it's terrible when it comes to healing because it retards the healing process. The infrared light that we do does the same thing. Except it speeds up the healing by about 50%, according to NASA studies. It improves circulation. It reduces inflammation. It boosts the immune system. It decreases the pain that you have. And it's all positive. And it works just about as well.
Well, it depends on who you're working with, too, because some people have different ways that they think in their minds, you know. But what I wanted to say is that it's easy to become impatient with pain because it hurts.
Oh, yeah, we get desperate.
But I have found at times when I've had back problems that sometimes just with time and rest, it'll let up.
Exactly.
And I could see how a person would think, well, when you look at the x-ray and you see the physiology of it or the anatomy of it, that you'd have to do something. But sometimes doing something is like not doing something.
Well, you're right. Well, you know, we're interested in taking your calls. If you have a story, because you have pain, and you'd like to know what we think and what we'd recommend.
Or if you have a question.
Yeah, just call us. The number is 888-874-4673. 4888. You'll get some good integrative advice about what you can do for your specific condition, and we'd be happy to provide that for you. It's time for Vicki's 2020 tip, and when we come back, we'll be taking your calls. Again, the number is 888-874-4888.
Sometimes you watch a movie and somebody's trying to kill somebody else and they put arsenic in their food.
Indeed.
But we don't usually think about arsenic in our water or arsenic in our, you know, our organic food and that kind of thing. But they've just done some studies and found out some interesting things, that some of these organic cereal bars or infant formula that you might want to read the label a little bit more closely, because many times they have high levels of arsenic, which is linked to cancer and chronic diseases and developmental effects. They've been found in foods now that list organic brown rice syrup as a primary ingredient. Now, this organic brown rice syrup, it's often used as a substitute for high fructose corn syrup because we don't want to eat high fructose corn syrup, and so it sounds healthy enough, doesn't it? Well, one of the infant formulas tested contained almost three times the inorganic arsenic allowed in drinking water.
Mm-hmm.
And one cereal bar contained 12 times the legal limit for drinking water. And some of these high-energy foods tested had 8 to 17 times the limit. Now, a couple of the infant formulas, one of them was dairy-based and the other soy-based. They didn't say the names of them, but they listed organic brown rice syrup as their primary ingredient. And they both contain arsenic levels 20 times higher than the other formulas made with organic brown rice syrup. So, you know, here people are feeding this to their infants. And this arsenic is not connected to pesticide use. It's linked to inorganic arsenic that comes from the soil for the rice. So we don't even know the long-term effects of this, but, you know, they do suspect cancer, so I would think that would be one of the long-term effects. They've also found high arsenic levels in some apple and grape juices, and organic foods are generally seen as healthier. Even foods that are organic might absorb arsenic through the natural process. In fact, rice takes up arsenic from the soil, and it turns out that arsenic looks a lot like silica to the rice plant, and then the rice takes up silica to help it stand up in the waterlogged soil. So that's why it's absorbing all this arsenic. So be sure to, you know, read the labels and look for brown rice syrup. You don't want to do that. But, you know, after reading some of these articles about this topic, I'm thinking maybe any rice. You know, a lot of people like to put a lot of rice in their diets.
Well, yeah, there are foods that tend to accumulate. Things like tea, for example, accumulates a lot of fluoride. It selectively absorbs it. So we don't want to be using a ton of tea, particularly with fluoridated water, because we'll wind up actually poisoning ourselves.
But anyway, there's a need for regulatory limits on arsenic in food, that's for sure.
Yeah, well, what I don't like about the way this article was presented is that they said organic foods may be an unsuspected source of dietary arsenic. Well, hello.
What about other foods?
What about other foods, too? It's sort of just a chance to take a shot at people who are doing that.
Well, I think it's because they're surprised that this organic brown rice syrup would be something that could be dangerous.
Mm-hmm. Oh, for sure.
You know, and so they're just trying to get your attention. A lot of these articles come out with an attention getter.
Ah, I think that's right. All right, the lines are open. This is Prescriptions for Health. I'm Dr. Len Sabuda with Nurse Vicki. The number is 888-874-4888.
Well, talk about pressure. A lot of doctors are now firing their patients who reject vaccinations.
Oh, my God.
But, you know, what about respecting patients' wishes? But we need to remember that there's no science behind vaccinations. They're not tested. And think about what's in them, including the mercury and the aluminum and the DNA and some of the other formaldehyde and some of these other things. And some people think that they're even linked to autism and other side effects. And some people can get horrible things like a paralysis of the central nervous system.
Guillain-Barré syndrome, that's right. Well, there are a lot of problems with the science of vaccines. And a lot of what comes out of the CDC are proclamations that this is something that we should know about and that we should just accept because they say it. And so you get together with the pediatricians and the American College of Pediatrics and the CDC, and they just blindly accept that this is a good thing to do. And the swine flu vaccine is the ultimate example, the epitome of stupidity, of arrogance, of naiveness, to assume just because the CDC says so, and they are a bunch of lying bastards, is all I can tell you. I feel that strong about it. I would like to see the CDC go away and not even be there.
If you want to know more about this, just go to drsaputo.com and put in the search box the infection deception.
Exactly, and you will come up with a scathing rebuttal that I have to the CDC that was published in a medical journal that talks about why this is the silliest thing to do. But the bottom line that comes up is that 20-30% of pediatricians have fired their patients because they won't take vaccines.
But, you know, this really isn't new. I mean, I remember when your brother's wife had their baby.
Right.
And you suggested that they not get a whole bunch of vaccines all
right.
at once.
Right.
And the doctor said, either you get the vaccines or you're not my patient. Well, think about it. Most kids, if they get all the vaccines that are recommended by their pediatricians, by the time they're 18, they've had 60 vaccinations.
Yeah, more.
Well, you don't want to just load up a newborn infant with a whole bunch of vaccines all at once. If you want to get the vaccines for them, at least spread it out.
Well, I'll say that's right. That's for sure. But to take the arrogant and, I say, naive position of saying you must take all the immunizations and you're not my patient, that is disrespectful to people who have done their homework a lot of the time and have read about the problems with immunizations and want to discuss it with their doctors. And I'll have to tell you, the bulk of them haven't read a damn thing when it comes to looking at the details of the vaccines. And I can tell you that
They don't want to know.
Rather, I think that may well be. Plus, it takes time. It's not easy to review topics like this.
Oh,
it takes a lot of time and effort to do that.
Remember the story of the woman that took her child to go get a vaccine and she was afraid of the thimerosal, which is the mercury that they put in many of the vaccines as a preservative, particularly in the multi-dose vials.
That's right.
And so she asked the doctor if there was thimerosal in it, and he said, oh, no, they don't put that in there anymore. And she says, well, I'd feel a lot better if I could look at the bottle or the insert or something. Mm-hmm. And the pediatrician's like, oh, sure, go ahead, just look at it. And right in there, it said thimerosal. And the pediatrician almost fell over. He was just shocked.
Yeah. Well, you put thimerosal in a little baby, and you're using 25 micrograms. That's a rather huge dose.
I mean, I had all the amalgams taken out of my mouth just because I didn't want the mercury in me.
Yeah.
Well, giving it to a little infant.
I have one patient who has a son that's 17 years old and is still going to a pediatrician and has autism, absolute autism. And this mother knows more about autism than most doctors by a lot. She goes to the DAN conferences. She goes to the best people in the world because she can afford it. So she'll be going to the top experts in autism. And her pediatrician said, well, if you won't give your son the vaccines, whether they have thimerosal or not in it, you can't be my patient. And she told me about that. And I wrote a scathing letter to that pediatrician at her request.
I bet you didn't get an answer.
Never heard a word. Why? Because there isn't any defense, because it's just stupidity. It's just stupidity. If we would do the science behind immunizations.
Well, they don't want to because it's big business.
It's huge business. It's a multi-billion-dollar industry. And the FDA is in bed with them. Congress is in bed with them. The World Health Organization is in bed with them. And I've proven all that in the paper called The Infection Deception, which you all should take a look at because it really looks at the details of what happened every day as the swine flu extravaganza was unfolding back in 2009. So I'm really upset with this whole thing because it's a huge issue that's filled with anything but science.
And the art of medicine is really respecting your patient's wishes.
It should be negotiated, and the pros and cons should be looked at. We'll come back to talking more about this. It's time for a short station break. You're listening to Prescriptions for Health. I'm Dr. Len Saputo here with Nurse Vicki. The number again is 888-874-4888. for Health. I'm Dr. Len Saputo here with Nurse Vicki. The number is 888-874-4888. I think we have a caller from JC from New York City. JC, you on the line?
Yes, I am.
How are you?
Okay, I have a pinched nerve in my neck.
Oh, boy, how long have you had it?
About a week and a half, 2 weeks. Any idea what I can do?
Does it go down your arm into your hand?
No.
Okay, have you been to a chiropractor?
Yes.
And did you get some help from that?
A little bit.
But you're still not able to do much, huh?
Yeah, I'm still having trouble.
Yeah, well, sometimes, you know, I don't know if you can find infrared light therapy in New York City. I'll bet you can. Most of the chiropractors know something about it, and most of them don't have an infrared scanner, but you can still do pretty good work by applying the infrared light to the areas around the neck where the inflammation is because it reduces it so well. The other things that you can do, of course, are physical therapy. You could do some acupuncture.
Icing it
is real good, particularly if it's nerve pain that you're having.
DMSO?
Yeah, DMSO is another real good thing to do. That's dimethyl sulfoxide. It's called DMSO because nobody can say it.
It's a liquid.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I'd keep up with the chiropractor because usually they help the most. And if you have and it's been a couple of weeks now, you may have something more than just a little bit of pain from a pulled muscle. You may have something that's like a disc or a nerve that's being pinched.
And sometimes they'll go back into place. If you use a cervical pillow, that can help too. When you lie on your side, make sure you have a pillow between your knees and another pillow under your top arm.
Yeah, and there are a whole bunch of different kinds of body work. Anything from Feldenkrais to Alexander work or what the physical therapists do.
Cranial
sacral is wonderful stuff. All those things could be of value.
Sometimes energy healing, too, like Reiki.
Mm-hmm. Maybe get a pillow, a cervical pillow, to help you sleep at night. That, like Vicki said, it's a great idea. Mm-hmm. So those are things that you could do, JC.
Thank you so much.
Well, I hope you feel better.
Yeah, I hope you feel better.
Sometimes traction, too, will help.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, thank you so much.
Okay,
JC. There's more information, by the way, on our website. If you go to drsaputo.com, there's a lot of information about all these techniques that we just told you about. And it's drsaputo.com. We have 2,000 audios and videos there that are all organized into health assessments. And there's one we have on back pain or neck pain, back and neck pain, actually, that takes about 3 minutes to fill out. And then we'll give you many, many options of what you could do for your particular situation, depending on how you fill out the health assessment survey. The site is completely free, by the way, so join the site so you can have access to the free information, okay, that will allow you to take the health assessments. And then if you have questions, you can contact me through the site, and I will be happy to email and answer your questions. Okay? Thanks for calling, JC. All right, the lines are open. This is Prescriptions for Health. I'm Dr. Len Saputo with Nurse Vicki. The number is 888-874-4888. I think we have a call from Harvey. Harvey, you there?
Hello there.
Hi, Harvey. How you doing?
Very good, and how are you today? And the both of you, and thanks for your show. Well, I have two things. One is a medical question, and another is I want to tell the two of you about the California Nuclear Initiative, the initiative to close down the San Onofre and the Diablo Canyon nuclear power plant. But first, the corns. I have a couple corns on the bottom of my feet, and I heard that when you use corn plasters, they have the salicylic acid in it, and it could create an abscess in the foot, like around the toe or the side of the foot. And then I heard that there's laser light that's used for corn removal. And then you talked about your infrared light, and I'm wondering, you know, which is the best way to go, because I want to go the way of least harm.
Well, the infrared light would be the safest thing to do, and it's easy, and it will help with the pain and inflammation. And that probably would happen in just two or three short treatments, maybe just in one. Other things you could do is there are a lot of devices that you can use that are pads that have holes in them. There are shoes that can be more comfortable. You could use DMSO topically. All those things could help with the pain. Generally, they form from pressure, and a lot of the time, a hammer toe will start that up. But even if you don't have a hammer toe, if your foot doesn't fit quite right in the shoe, it may lead to the development of a corn. Now, what about the issue with the radiation and shutting down plants? I think that's a great topic. I'd like to see more of that happen because Vicki and I are not for nuclear power plants.
Well, as you know, California has hundreds of fault lines, and we're always being told about the big one. The big one, we're told to put water aside and food and everything. Well, both the San Onofre power plant and the Diablo Canyon power plant are sitting on and near fault lines. And
that's
isn't that crazy?
Can you imagine that?
It's just ludicrous.
That's right. And unfortunately, the Diablo Canyon nuclear power plant is sitting actually in front of the Central Valley, and you know sea breezes blow inland. And if we get a Fukushima, if we get a big shaker, they didn't expect one in Fukushima either. But if we get a big shaker, and those brittle pipes, you know that plant in particular, Diablo Canyon has been sitting there for 26 years, and they run so hot that the pipes get brittle. And if they get a big shaker, the cooling system could go down. Then we'll have a nuclear explosion, and the radioactive cloud will go back into the Central Valley and irradiate all the foods and the waters that flow off of the Sierras into cities through the Central Valley and into L.A. and into San Francisco. All that will become irradiated, and we'll end up with a fuka. You know, people will have to leave California.
That's really right. You're looking at 10,000 years before the radiation would come back to a level that would allow people to live there with some kind of safety.
So we need all the other people that are listening to this show from other states to pay attention to, because otherwise we're going to end up going to them.
I don't know who had the short-sighted vision to recommend nuclear power.
It had to be about money. You know it had to be about money.
Well, of course it had to be. I mean, there are conflicts of interest all over the place here. But eventually, what happens after 100 years, you know, when a plant's up like that? You know that you're going to have major problems and that are not going to be fixable. And what do you do with all that waste? Anyway, Harvey, go on. It didn't mean
to interrupt. It's like they don't care. They're not going to be here in 100 years.
Yeah, maybe.
Well, that's, you know, the idea that the plants are sitting on fault lines and the big one is coming is only one problem. The storage of nuclear waste is the other. They're all overloaded with it. And recently, the San Onofre power plant, which was just, they had new pipes put in a few years ago. Those pipes are wearing thin too fast. They're starting to blow, and radioactive water was released into the atmosphere. So both plants are in dire straits, and they're both sitting on what they call the ring of fire. That's the earthquake zone up and down the coast.
So the thing is that
there's a guy named Ben Davis Jr. who created an initiative that closed down the Rancho Seco plant just outside of Sacramento, and it was the only initiative that ever closed down a nuclear plant. Well, he's written one called the California Nuclear Initiative. If you Google those words, California Nuclear Initiative, you go on his website, and it tells you how to sign up to be part of it, and he has to raise 500,000 signatures by April 16th. So that the ballot initiative will be put on the fall election, the presidential election in the fall. So we're looking for as many signatures as possible. So this is it.
Okay, this is CaliforniaNuclearInitiative.com?
Yes.
Okay, thank you so much for that information, Harvey.
And thank you for the information on the corns. I really appreciate it.
All right, you have a great day.
Good luck with that.
Thanks for calling.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
All right, the lines are open. This is Prescriptions for Health. I'm Dr. Len Sabuda with Nurse Vicki. The number is 888-874-4888. And we'll be back taking your calls after Vicki's last 2020 tip.
My last trip to Costco.
Oh, to Costco?
Yesterday, I was at my local Costco. I was buying a large bag of Purina dog chow for my loyal pet Jake, the wonder dog. And I was in the checkout line when a woman behind me asked if I had a dog. What did she think I had? An elephant?
Yeah, right.
So, since I'm retired and have little to do on impulse, I told her that, no, I didn't have a dog. I was starting the Purina diet again. Well, I added that I probably shouldn't because I ended up in the hospital the last time, but that I'd lost 50 pounds before I awakened in the intensive care unit with tubes coming out of most of my orifices and IVs in both arms. So I told her that it was essentially a perfect diet and that the way that it works is to load your pants pockets with Purina nuggets and simply eat one or two every time you feel hungry. Well, the food is nutritionally complete, so it works well, and I was going to try it again. I have to mention here that practically everybody in the line was now enthralled with my story. So, horrified, she asked if I ended up in the intensive care because the dog food poisoned me. I said, no. I stepped off the curb to sniff the poodle's tail and a car hit me.
Oh, jeez.
Oh, no, I thought the guy behind me was going to have a heart attack. He was laughing so hard. Costco won't let me shop there anymore.
You know what I buy at Costco? Tennis balls.
Yeah, right.
Oh, that's great, Vicki. Thanks. Little humor goes a long way. Huh? So we have a dog I didn't know, huh? The lines are open. The number is 888-874-4888.
You know, we were going to finish up on the vaccinations, and I think the main thing that we didn't get to was we wanted to just mention how easy it would be to do the studies to show if the vaccines worked or not. All they have to do is to have two groups, one group that has the vaccines and the other group that don't, and then see what the side effects are and see if it makes a difference or not.
See if the vaccine works.
And we could have the NIH fund it.
Well, they should. I mean, that's supposed to be the people's representative. We pay for the NIH, and all the studies are funded through it. Why the heck can't they just put big mouths like me, you know, just shut me up by doing a study that says, see, it works, it doesn't have side effects, and it's safe to use?
Because they say it's not ethical, because people would be going without the vaccines. But, you know, people are already going without the vaccines,
right.
So just ask for volunteers. Hello?
Yeah, really, hello is right. I mean, if we can figure it out, why the hell can't the NIH figure it out? All right.
Okay, so... is there really a drug shortage crisis? I mean, is this real or a ploy to increase the demand for drugs?
Well, what they're saying is that we have shortages in chemotherapy, in certain antibiotics, in drugs for ADHD, for certain anesthetics.
It makes people want them more.
Well, it's a great advertising ploy. And, you know, I don't trust Big Pharma any further than I can throw it. They lie, cheat, do everything that they can to sell their product. They don't give a stuff about us. There have been plenty of cases where they've killed tens of thousands of people knowingly that they would do that. And here we are in a situation where we're now led to believe that there are shortages here. And what we're reading about in the papers is people are dying because they can't get chemotherapy, that they can't get the right antibiotics, that we don't have enough drugs to, you know, to give more people, you know, more than 5% or 10% of the population of kids drugs for ADHD, and maybe we're not going to be able to do anesthesia. I mean, hello.
Well, the other thing it does is that if we're short on one drug, sometimes it helps them to sell more of another drug.
Well, I think that's right. So if you're short of a drug that's a big seller, and you got tons of stuff on your shelf that you can't sell that would be its replacement, what better way to sell it?
Well, they really are trying hard to sell it. I mean, some of these drugs really do cost a lot of money, like some of the chemo drugs.
Well, do you think that Big Pharma would allow a real shortage to occur of drugs that were making billions of dollars a year?
So they're crying wolf, anything. I guess.
I think they are, but you know,
how
you don't...
How do we know when it's true or not?
Well,
true?
What does the FDA say? Oh, there are mechanical problems. We can't get enough supply of the stuff we need. They might be contaminated. There might be viruses or bacteria in there that are doing things. There may be other quality issues. And indeed, that's probably true from time to time. But all of a sudden now we're short on all these different drugs at one time? Hello? I don't know. I'm mistrusting. I can't accuse and say it's true, but I'm sure suspicious because I found that trusting Big Pharma is nuts. If you want to learn about the karma of Big Pharma, read my book, A Return to Healing, Radical Healthcare Reform and the Future of Medicine. Just put A Return to Healing in Amazon, and there's a chapter in there called The Karma of Big Pharma that describes all the atrocities that they do that they think is just straightforward business.
Well, the other thing on our website, drsaputo.com, we have a chapter in video of each chapter in the book.
Right. It is free. It's entirely free.
I don't
free.
Know what chapter the Pharma of Big Pharma is.
I think it's chapter 4 or 6. Yeah, that's right. Anyway, that'd be a good thing to do. Anyway, the lines are open. This is Prescriptions for Health. I'm Dr. Len Saputo with Nurse Vicki. The number is 888-874-4888. We have a call from Jackie. Hi, Jackie.
Hi. I know you like cacao.
And I saw on Dr. Oz that it gives you energy. So the person was saying, don't ingest it in the, you know, much later than the afternoon. But and also that it doesn't have caffeine. Is that true?
I don't know about the caffeine part because I just don't know. But I know that cacao is, of course, what we make chocolate out of, like you said. And it has some good features to it. And when you make chocolate out of that, you're adding a lot of things to it that are not so healthy. But the cacao bean itself is a little bit bitter. I've eaten them before. I don't relish them a lot because it just doesn't do my taste. I'd rather have that poisonous milk chocolate because it tastes better.
I like dark chocolate.
Yeah, Vicky likes the dark chocolate. But it'll lower your blood pressure. It's a good antioxidant and anti-inflammatory. So I think it's something that in small amounts is a good thing to include in our diet. If we use less of the things that are not so good for us in the chocolate, that's better. And so, yeah, that's what I think about cacao.
But probably, I'm allergic to chocolate, so it probably wouldn't work for me.
I wouldn't try it if you're allergic to chocolate. No, okay. Probably not for you. And there are many other ways, you know, to get your antioxidants and your anti-inflammatories and to control your blood pressure. Eat a healthy diet. You know, it's all lifestyle stuff. Eat the right foods, you know, the vegetables and fruits, the seeds and nuts, the herbs and spices. Make sure you exercise. Sleep is a huge factor. You don't get enough sleep, you're going to get hypertension a lot of the time, or type 2 diabetes or osteoporosis. Don't weigh too much and you know, have a meaningful purpose in your life. Those are the good things to do, Jackie.
I wish the two of you would get on Dr. Oz. You know, everybody is watching him and talking about him.
I know.
He mentioned black raspberry. Now, Vicky, you mentioned that, I would say, 2.5-3 years ago.
Yeah, those berries in the morning are really the way to go, aren't they?
And so he said, well, I just found this out. And I thought, I heard about this from Vicky. I just didn't know exactly where to get it. But, you know, he said to get it in the freeze-dried form. But you can actually get it in jam. So,
Well, you can even eat the berries. You know, that's what we do.
If you can get them, yes.
Yeah. Well, eat seasonally, and there are other things besides berries that you can have. It depends on the season. There are things in the wintertime that work well, too. I think that's eating local, eating organic, eating things that are real food and not things that are packaged foods that have lots of processing is the way to go. So, Jackie, thanks for calling. We appreciate the call. Have a great day. The lines are open. This is Prescriptions for Health. I'm Dr. Len Sabuti here with Nurse Vicki. The number is 888-874-4888.
Well, a new study shows that aggressive screening for osteoporosis may be important for heart failure patients because heart failure is linked to thinner bones and more fractures. You know, both heart failure itself and its medical treatments can both lead to loss of bone mass. So tell us about this.
Okay. Well, we're looking at a 30% increase in major fractures and a huge risk for osteoporosis. And this was all published in the Endocrine Society's Journal of the Clinical Endocrinology and Metabolism. And a lot of the time what happens is probably some of the drugs that are used for people who have heart failure, they're often in anticoagulants because the risk for blood clots is higher than it is in the general population. And so you can easily wind up with osteoporosis from Coumadin treatment, for example. But you also get it from heparin. You can get it from drugs like Avandia, which is used for treating diabetes, a drug that I think should be off the market because it increases your risk for heart attacks and strokes. Why anybody would take that drug is beyond me when there are other ways to do it. Dilantin does that. Of course, steroids do it. The SSRI antidepressants will cause osteoporosis. And sometimes these drugs are used in people who have heart failure as well. I think past that, I don't know that they understand the mechanism that's associated with this 30% increase, but that's a good start.
So are there things that people can do that have heart failure to prevent osteoporosis? I mean, like supplementary supplements or, you know, exercise, obviously.
Well, exercise would be a good thing, and it's good for the heart failure as well. You know, you'd think that somebody has heart failure should be resting more. And actually, it's quite the reverse. If you get people to go into exercise programs that are controlled, they should be supervised by a cardiologist or by a clinic that does that. That's the best way to do it. And, of course, that's what the bones respond to the most. I think a lot of people who have congestive heart failure are inactive. They're not doing anything. We know that if you lay in bed in a hospital, for example, for a few months, which some people do, you're going to lose bone. It's just like the astronauts. They go into space. There's no gravity. They come back with osteoporosis.
So are there supplements you'd recommend?
Absolutely. I think vitamin D, vitamin K2, and, of course, you got to be careful with vitamin K2 because if you mix that with Coumadin, you're going to get yourself into a place where the Coumadin won't work, and you'll actually be back at risk for heart attacks. But most people don't realize that even people with Coumadin need vitamin K2.
But just don't do it on your own.
Your doctor has to supervise this, and unfortunately most doctors don't even know that vitamin K2 is a good idea for people who have Coumadin to take if it's taken in the dose under 100 micrograms a day, because it stabilizes the prothrombin times, the INRs that we measure for that. But it must be supervised by a physician.
Is there a place that a person could recommend that their doctor go learn about that?
Yeah, our website. Go to drsaputo.com. Put in vitamin K2, and up will come an article that paraphrases a lot of what Dr. Julian Whitaker has to say about it. And it's fascinating, because people who are on Coumadin and have a vitamin K2 deficiency, which they will if they're on that, are going to be at risk for developing aortic valve calcifications and developing arteriosclerosis of their arteries within 2 years. And this is from an article published where? New England Journal of Medicine. Okay, the biggest journal we have that we respect. And who reads it? Who cares about nutrition when they're in medicine? Hardly anybody. In fact, they will tell you if you're on Coumadin, and your doctor or cardiologist will say, don't eat those green leafy vegetables because they have vitamin K in them, and that'll upset the Coumadin.
Maybe they don't need to take as much Coumadin then.
Well.
And what about recommending some fish oil?
They have to take more Coumadin, and that's okay. They can do that. And, of course, the whole business of Coumadin is a big question mark anyway.
Well, what about fish oil?
Fish oil, in my opinion, would be a great thing to do. So it's something called nattokinase or lumbrokinase or ginkgo biloba. All those things could be supervised by somebody who understands nutrition that also understands people who have congestive heart failure or who are in need for anticoagulation for any reason.
To me, I don't know. It just seems ridiculous to tell a patient to not eat green vegetables, but I've heard people say that before.
Well, doctors say that all the time, but what does a doctor know about nutrition? I mean, we get an hour of nutrition in our medical school training and we're supposed to know nutrition? Give me a break. You couldn't possibly learn nutrition in an hour.
Like with people
you can't learn it in 5 years.
Well, it's like people that have cancer and the doctors many times tell them not to take any supplements.
Oh, or to don't worry about eating sugar. You know, just go ahead and eat sugar or whatever you want. High fructose corn syrup is fine.
Cancer cells love sugar. They just go crazy over sugar.
It's just common sense. But if you don't know about it, how are you going to have an opinion that's valid? I don't want to hear an opinion from somebody who hasn't studied nutrition. Why would you want to listen to somebody who has ideas without any knowledge? I mean, you might as well go to your priest and ask him about nutrition, or go to, you know, the butcher shop and ask him about vegetables. I mean, where are you going to get good advice? You have to know what to do. And there's a great way to monitor to see whether or not your blood is too thick. And we don't do it in the mainstream. It's like insanity.
The live blood cell analysis.
Yeah, why not look at living blood and see what it does? You know,
you can see a video of it, watch it move around, and see if it clumps together or not.
Yeah, and if it's all clumped together, guess what? You got a problem. It's too thick. I don't care what your prothrombin time is. For me, if I had a problem like that, and this is not advice to anybody, I would use nattokinase, and I'd use fish oil. Because I've done this many times. I now have a test that I order on my own patients who have the need for anticoagulation. It's called a live blood cell analysis stress test. I invented that myself with my biophysicist who does live blood cell analyses. And what we do is we look at the live blood and see if it clumps. If it's all clumpy, we know that we got a problem.
So you challenge it and take some fish oil.
Yeah, or give them fish oil. If that doesn't solve it, then we add some nattokinase, and then we know what works and what doesn't.
You can see it.
You can watch it. Yeah, I mean, it's not complicated stuff. These are not Einsteinian concepts. These are simple things that common sense tells you, why not look at that, rather than just say, well, the proton is fine. And of course, now they're coming out with what? New drugs like Pradaxa and a couple others just like it that are supposed to be wonderful because now you don't have to do a proton. But guess what? They cause a lot of bleeding. I mean, we got one drug that's dangerous substituted by another drug that's dangerous when we could be using things that hardly ever cause problems, the fish oil, the natokinase, the safest things on the planet, and they work. All right, it looks like we're at the end of the show, so I'd like to remind you that we'll be back to talk live about what's new in the news and health and take your health questions, which we do every Monday afternoon on PRN.FM and DrSaputo.com from 3 to 4 Eastern Time and 12 to 1 Pacific Time. Prescriptions for Health will also be archived on DrSaputo.com as well as PRN.FM.
And if you enjoyed today's show and you'd like to have more information on the topics we discussed, go to DrSaputo.com and check out our Fast Track videos. And remember, lifestyle is the most powerful healer in the universe, so if you want to be well, pay attention to the style in which you live your life.
Have a wonderful week. We'll see you next Monday.